the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
AI is helping SARS track down undeclared crypto profits. There's a common misconception among some taxpayers that crypto profits fall outside the South African tax net. That's a mistake, and South African Revenue Services appears to be getting better at tracking down these undeclared gains. Another misconception is that a taxable event only occurs when you sell crypto and convert the proceeds to fiat. Selling one crypto asset for another, say Bitcoin for Tether, which is a US dollar-backed stablecoin, is in actual fact a taxable event. Whether you're a crypto trader or hodler, that is somebody who buys and holds for the long term, SARS has ways of monitoring your activity and can demand trading records from crypto exchanges. And it's using AI to help identify and round up what it deems to be tax delinquents. SARS has made it very clear that it will leave no stone unturned in fulfilling its mandate to collect revenue by whatever means necessary. And this also raises the question, when is a crypto transaction deemed income or a capital gain? If it's income, the tax rate is a maximum of 45% for individuals or 27% in the case of companies. If it's a capital gain, it's much lower than that. There's a lot happening in the crypto tax space, and to find out what's going on, we're joined by Jashwin Baiju, Head of Strategic Engagement and Compliance at Tax Consulting South Africa. Hi, Jashwin, how are you doing?
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me on here. Not too bad on yourself.
Not bad. Okay, so let's get into this. There's still a lot of confusion amongst crypto enthusiasts about their tax positions, as you probably know, particularly when it comes to accumulating or trading of cryptos. Help us out here. Have there been any new directives issued by SARS to help clarify the different scenarios under which tax would be payable?
So I wouldn't call them new, but informal guidance has been received from both SARS and the South African Reserve Bank in terms of the treatment of not only cryptocurrency, but specific cryptocurrency trading models and the taxation thereon. Now, on the SARS side, you know, it's been made very clear that when it comes to something like mining, staking, etc., well, those are very much trading stock in the hands of the respective crypto investor or crypto trader, meaning it's taxed at a marginal rate, be it for individuals on a sliding scale between 18 and 45%, or for companies at a flat 27%. Now, on the other hand, you've got individuals who acquire cryptocurrency with a capital intent, and that is when we look more to capital gains rather than the trading stock nature of the currency.
Okay, so that's quite a wide variance, 18 to 45%. Now let's get into this a bit more. Do you have a sense that SARS is paying particularly close attention to cryptos and crypto transactions?
Absolutely. So what we've seen in the market over the last 2 years, because if we cycle back to 2019, that's when the initial guidance at a very superficial level was provided by the Reserve Bank and by the South African Revenue Service. Fast forward, and you have a crypto compliance eradication plan. What that means, very simply, is when traders or investors acquire crypto assets or acquire trading stock, depending on the transactional frequency of their trades, it is, one, logged on their CSVs on platform, which the South African Revenue Service does have access to, and two, South African Revenue Service further has access to all bank accounts, including detailed statements of every single taxpayer in South Africa, whether it's domestic accounts or international accounts.
Okay, so there's been a lot of press reporting on the use of AI by SARS officials in tracking down tax delinquents. What's your understanding of this? How is this AI helping them to identify who should be paying tax and who isn't?
So SARS have implemented an AI strategy. And if we think of the budget speech announcements where it was very clear that they were gunning towards a smart and modernized SARS. Now, what that meant at the time was not very clear. And factually, it took months and if not a year or two before some sort of certainty was given. And we have it on very good authority from the Commissioner's office that SARS's AI process and embarking on this AI journey, it's at the very start. And they anticipate a good 3 to 5 years before they've worked out all the bugs in their AI processing. But practically, and even in its infancy as it is now, what is happening is SARS requests financial information, transactional logs, credit and debit transactions from financial institutions, crypto trading platforms, etc. They then take that and would feed it into AI. And the reason I say this is because in the last 6 months, we have seen audit requests from SARS, which look nothing like the audit requests received 2 years ago. And I say that very simply because, well, 2 years ago, you would get a letter saying request for relevant material, either for verification or audit. This letter would stipulate the tax year in question, the amount, and what information SARS needs in bullet point form. Now what we see is the same letter accompanied by annexures that SARS, maybe through AI, maybe through some auditor interpreting the AI data-driven insights, has created. And that ranges from everything, including an income and expenditure schedule, right to a capital disclosure of your capital assets year on year, including appreciation or depreciation, as the case may be. And that is something we have only started seeing this year. An example of that was a client of ours received a notice of audit going back 10 years, and SARS attached an Excel sheet with over 5,800 line items. Every single expense that has gone through this taxpayer's account for the last 10 years, and a further column in that Excel saying taxpayer comments. They need to now explain every single outbound and inbound transaction on their bank account, even where it is a case of literally saying 10 Rand parking William Nickel.
Wow, that's a bit disturbing and a bit troubling for people who are involved in the crypto space and they may be anticipating getting one of these notices or spreadsheets from SARS going back 10 years, 5,800 line items. What are the chances of you keeping records that long? How do you reconstruct this?
Slim to zero, because factually, in terms of data regulations, well, you're obligated to hold on to records for 5 years. Thereafter, you may destroy them. Now, the thing with these audits is they're raised where there is a suspicion of, one, fraud, two, material misrepresentation of facts, or negligence. So you've got your grounds to actually open that audit beyond the standard 5 year period. And the opening of that audit beyond the period is at the commissioner's discretion, which at times can be exceptionally broad. Taking it one step further, SARS are now also, and this is very pertinent to any crypto trader because typically your crypto trading income or gains are over and above your salaried income, meaning you're a provisional taxpayer. SARS are now auditing provisional tax returns to the point where they ask taxpayers for a forecast as to what you're going to earn and what you're going to spend in the next 6 months, also via spreadsheet.
So you have no idea what you are going to be spending in the next 6 months. That's also a bit frightening. Is this legal?
So, one, yes, it's legal. And two, you would be surprised at what is actually legal and permissible simply because the tax acts in a number of provisions grant the commissioner discretion to request any additional information SARS deem as relevant material. Any additional tax periods historically may be opened if SARS suspect there is a degree of fraud or misrepresentation. So with the wide berth given to that discretion, SARS are at a point where they almost have this unfettered power to investigate what they feel needs to be investigated. And the law supports that with the discretionary provisions and powers provided to the Commissioner of SARS.
So when you say they have a suspicion, I mean, you could be suspicious about anything. Is it a reasonable suspicion? Is there a legal definition for that?
So that's the thing. It's the same with the term discretion. I mean, you can take the Oxford definition, you can take the Cambridge definition, but factually, even suspicion, it's very subjective. And it usually is, yes, where there's reasonable grounds for this, or a very famous line in those letters for request of relevant material is, SARS have picked up a risk on your account, and therefore you must provide this entire laundry list of additional information for a number of years of assessment. So the rationale behind it is very clear. SARs are, one, pushing to eradicate all non-compliance, whether it is locally, internationally, with tangible assets, intangible assets, multiple income streams, single income streams. And this very strongly pushes the agenda and in fulfilling their mandate to collect tax revenue by whatever means possible. It literally is a crackdown on non-compliance across every single sector, whether corporate, individual, tangible, intangible. And a recommendation is, you know, the moment you get that SARS notice, don't wait for D-Day. You know, we've had it many times where D-Day is tomorrow and we're getting a call at 6 p.m. the night before. And yes, you can maneuver and possibly request an extension on actually submitting that supporting document. But if you fail to meet those deadlines, SARS may then proceed to make adjustments they deem fit to your gross income, which are always increases, and then impose additional taxation. But taking it one step further, it's not the additional taxation that is the nail in the coffin, but it is the behavioral penalty table contained in the Tax Administration Act that allows SARS to impose a 200% behavioral penalty if they feel it is repetitive, tax evasive, and all in all, very, very obstructive to the course of their mandate to collect revenue.
Let's just get back to basics here and talk about what is a taxable event in crypto. So you've got somebody who buys Bitcoin and has held it for 10 years. I presume there is no tax event there until that is sold. Then you would have people who are involved in trading of various different kinds. Just run us through a few scenarios there and what would be the tax implications.
Okay, good. So the first thing to consider is when it comes to crypto, any form of disposal, whether in part or in full, for crypto exchanges, on platform exchanges, movements to cold storage, they're all taxable events, right? Every single crypto movement is considered a taxable event.
So if you're moving your Bitcoin off of an exchange onto a wallet, that's a taxable event.
It's a disposal on the exchange. So your CSV actually logs it as a disposal as well. Mm-hmm. That's where your problem comes in, because the CSV computation is, one, what SARS analyze, and two, it's what we use to actually do your crypto tax computations so that we can submit your returns correctly, add it to your salaried income, other rental streams, etc. And alternatively, enter into the voluntary disclosure program for guys that have historically misstepped in terms of their crypto compliance and not declared. And again, it's not necessarily the taxpayer's fault, because if we go back to the inception of cryptocurrency, there were no regulations. There was nothing telling you, listen, this is how it has to be treated. This is how it has to be declared. And that is where a lot of crypto traders are falling into the trap, thinking that, you know, historically this was the idea, but this misconception cannot be carried forward. It has to be remedied at this stage. Now, you talk about the different types of trades. So you've got your classifications. You've got your crypto for crypto on exchange on the same platform.
Let's just talk about that. Let's say Bitcoin has run up. You've had a fantastic gain on it, and you want to convert that without moving on the exchange. So you sell Bitcoin, you buy US dollar Tether. Is that a taxable
event?
Taxable event.
Correct.
Okay.
And remember, all of your crypto taxation works on the FIFO method. So first in, first out, meaning the base cost of that Bitcoin, should it be more on the capital side of things, the base cost will be the first Bitcoin you acquired. If you bought one in 2010 and you bought one in 2020, when you finally make that disposal of one Bitcoin, it's the 2010 Bitcoin that's being disposed.
Okay, because a lot of people would be doing like dollar cost averaging. Mm-hmm. They might be buying a bit of Bitcoin every month. What SARS is going to do is going to look at your earliest first transaction, first in, first out.
That is absolutely correct. And even when you sell on platform, the common misconception is you dispose of a crypto asset, you then realize those funds for a fiat profit or gain, and you pull those funds off your platform back into your bank account. And that is where your misconception of this is the only taxable event, I need to only declare this, needs to be dispelled very quickly. Because even if you dispose and leave the funds on platform, it's a taxable event. If you dispose one Bitcoin and you buy 10 Ethereum with those same funds, it's a taxable event. If you do a platform exchange, taxable event. If you do arbitrage trading, taxable event. If you airdrop, taxable event. If you engage in staking activities and receive reward tokens, taxable event. So absolutely everything is a taxable event, but what type of taxable event is the real differentiating factor as to the tax treatment and whether it goes capital gains tax, which is at a far lower rate, or trading stock, meaning trading profit, therefore marginal income tax rate, which ranges between 18 and 45% for individuals and is 27% for companies.
Right. And if it's a capital gain, so let's say a person has accumulated Bitcoin over 5 years ago, held it, then decides he or she wants to sell it. Capital gain or income?
Most likely capital gain. And the reason for that is, one, as much as we speak of a capital intent, intent is very subjective. However, acquiring an asset with a capital intent and then holding on to it for a number of years objectively demonstrates that capital intent, meaning it is more akin to an asset. And when an asset is disposed of, unless a personal use asset, it is then subject to capital gains tax.
Right. And the rate applicable there is what, 12.5% or up to 18?
No. So you're looking at around an 18, and it depends on the type of entity that's making that capital disposal, whether it's an individual or a company, but your range starts at an 18 and it stops at about a 22.6%.
Right. This is going to be concerning for a lot of crypto enthusiasts. Now, you've already covered this, but I think crypto arbitrage has become quite popular in South Africa. I mean, I think that's fairly obvious that that would be an income because you're closing out a trade usually in a 24-hour period of doing the trade. What about arbitrage when you're doing it across the border? And give us an example of the kind of arbitrage that we're talking about here, cross-border.
Yep. So in terms of crypto arbitrage trading, the principle is it's really simple, really. You buy one Bitcoin at cost A. You sell it at A plus 10%, right? Typically, you get your lower cost on a different exchange. You move exchanges and you sell it on the exchange that'll give you a higher return. That is the basic principle of crypto arbitrage trading. But when it's done within the borders of South Africa, that's one discussion. And I mean, you're doing it in the course and furtherance of an enterprise, which is crypto arbitrage trading, meaning, yes, correctly said, it is profits, usually business profits. Guys typically do the arbitrage through a company. When you bring in an element of cross-border crypto movement, because again, it's more profitable, as we know, to buy it on an offshore exchange at a lower rate and sell it locally, your biggest concern and hurdle, which you're likely to not overcome, is South African Reserve Bank approval. You've got two options. You've got a standard trading model, you've got an advanced trading model. Where there is that cross-border element, what we've seen practically from clients is, one, they're not engaging in arbitrage on their own crypto assets only. They have a client base that they're trading on behalf of. And Reserve Bank has been very clear on the fact that if you are trading on behalf of a client offshore, firstly, to get those funds out of South Africa to actually acquire the asset on the offshore exchange requires Reserve Bank approval for South African residents and non-residents if the funds are SA-based. You require a SARS approval called an Approval for International Transfer, which was implemented on the 24th of April last year only. South African residents are entitled to move R1 million per 12-month cycle, which is their single discretionary allowance.
And you don't need approval for that?
You do not. Thereafter, you need an Approval for International Transfer as a resident. Should you wish to move more than 10 million, you need a second layer of approval from the Reserve Bank. And the reason I mention this is, in order for clients of the arbitrage trader to move those funds and engage in the benefit of the arbitrage trader's services, they need to, in their individual capacities, apply for those approvals. The trader cannot do it on your behalf. And furthermore, the trader should ideally not have a vested interest on the performance of that asset, but rather charge you a fixed fee, almost like a portfolio manager for stock. They charge you a fixed monthly, bi-monthly, annual fee, whatever the case is, but it is fixed. It is not contingent on the performance of your crypto asset and that transaction itself. And that is your standard trading model that Reserve Bank are kind of okay with. Still need approval, but may get it. When you come to advanced trading models, the chances of you getting that are slim to none.
Now explain, what is an advanced trading model?
An advanced trading model is very simply where you have structured your arbitrage trading enterprise or business in such a way that you have a vested interest in the performance of the respective crypto asset. You further have unfettered control over how the asset is acquired, where it is acquired, how it is disposed, where it is disposed, and when it is disposed. Essentially, in an advanced trading model, you act not so much as a fund manager or a broker, but you act as an agent, meaning your clients become a principal and you are trading on their behalf. And thus far from Reserve Bank, every single application for advanced trading models has been declined.
Now, are not a lot of the guys who are offering arbitrage services using an advanced trading model? Is this a new thing for them now that they're getting blocked?
No. So the thing is, a lot of guys offering arbitrage trading, one, are either registered offshore, meaning they're not South African resident entities, or they are registered in a specific fashion in South Africa that deems them to be external companies, meaning they are not subjected to the same scrutiny from the South African Reserve Bank. And one such option is a headquarter company structure. Not a headquarter in the traditional sense of your head office sits here or there, but it's a specific type of company structure, which is treated as external for Reserve Bank purposes, as confirmed actually in the Reserve Bank's B2B guide, and therefore does not be subjected to the same stringency of control and the same level of verification on international transactions.
Just getting back to AI for a minute, I guess this is going to become more and more intense as, first of all, AI improves and as the amount of data that SARS can access increases. So we already have heard of cases where they've gone to the exchanges and asked for trading records of particular clients on that exchange, and the exchanges have handed it over. That was a concern at the time. I guess this is becoming more and more common and will become more and more common. They've already got access to your bank account so they can see the movements in and out of your bank to the various exchanges. And this data is just going to grow and grow. And therefore, the AI models and the learning on those AI models is going to improve.
That's absolutely correct. And it may even get to the point where you don't have an auditor on the other side of your laptop. You simply have AI that is asking you the right questions because as AI does, and I mean, even as example, a Google ad does, it goes through a learning process. And while it's learning, the AI does exactly what AI is supposed to do. It develops. It develops new protocols, new risk mitigation factors, new performance indicators. And as time goes, that is going to, yes, probably result in the loss of a good couple of jobs. But at the same time, you're going to get a more real-time reporting function, which will make compliance easier, as SARS have said in their strategic objectives, you know, to make compliance easier and sometimes seamless. And through the use of AI is one way to do that. But factually, what's actually happening is it's making the auditor or the revenue authority, it's making their job easier and allows them to be more accurate, more efficient, and more assertive in terms of eradicating non-compliance.
Okay, that's very interesting, and I guess in some ways disturbing for a lot of the crypto people out there. For a long period of time, there was the assumption that SARS wasn't really on top of this, and it was unregulated, and there wasn't clear tax guidance. Now it is, and AI is being brought in, so we can assume that there's going to be more and more vigilance on the part of SARS, and more expectation of compliance and enforcement as well.
Correct, and as we've seen, SARS have been ramping up their compliance drives. They have been ramping up their collection measures, including third-party instructions to banks without taxpayers receiving the notice because legally they're permitted to do that. And you wake up one morning and there's $200,000, $300,000 out of your bank account. So there is no end in sight. Compliance is key. And as a point of departure, where you have been engaged by SARS, it's always recommended that you do not ignore it. Don't bury your head in the sand. Respond immediately, swiftly, correctly, and professionally. And where it becomes messy, you do need the services of a specialist tax attorney for that legal professional privilege.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Jashwin Baiju, Head of Strategic Engagement and Compliance at Tax Consulting South Africa. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.